is starting towards the end of February, and mark your calendars, February 26th. They will be at the Burren. It is 7 o'clock. You are listening to WMFO in Medford. Usually at this point, we try to segue to Between the Worlds, but I just got a wonderful CD from Anlar this week called Deception, and it was a hard choice. I was very tempted by The Man on the Boran, but that's not what we're going to hear. Nope, we're going to hear something else entirely.
A toucan is shaking its head. The focus goes up to the treetops, and suddenly smoke starts to spread. As we're gliding past a big trunk, the piano begins in G sharp. While a dozer is driving towards us, he's strolling through the burnt forest in the twilight. And then the wood guy starts to sing. He's asking a whole lot of questions. An elephant's carcass zoomed in. Some Maasai's are gathered around it, with head rising up through the smoke, and a tree's falling down to the ground as the singer amidst the inferno is launching the chorus in a Jesus Christ post. Picturing the time before they met hell, with animals still running across the savannah, when the indigenous hunters still follow his prey. But we feel that the worst bit's still waiting for us. The scenery has changed to a town where homeless are walking through ruins and tanks are rolling around. A family is mourning their daughter, and now they're all going to their knees. The burnt soil is loose, and it seems there's a lot of hand digging to do. And in comes the storm. Now the earth starts trembling, the wind is blowing. Therefore they all have to cling on to something. By shouting out loud and vigorous stamping, Black Jesus himself is reversing the timeline. Whether they rainforest trees or humans, they all have to play their part in the joyful return of the dead. We plow and sow, we are so low that we delve in the dirty clay, till we bless the plain with golden grain and the vale with the fragrant hay. Our place we know, we are so low down at the landlord's feet. We're not too low the bread to grow, but too low the bread to eat. We're low, we are so low, yet from our fingers glide the silken flow and the robes that glow round the limbs of the sons of pride. And what we get and what we give, we know and we know our share. We're not too low the cloth to weave, but too low the cloth to wear. Down, down we go, we are so low, to the hell of the deep-sunk mine. But we gather the proudest gems that glow when the crown of the despot shines. Whenever he lacks, upon our backs fresh loads he deigns to lay. We're far too low to vote the tax, but not too low to pay. We're low, as to war we go to fight some foreign country. That was yesterday our greatest friend, but today's our enemy. God bless our boys, the papers scream, praise them, the churchmen cry. When the war is won and home we come, who cares if we live or die? We're low, so low, into boats we go to flee war in our home country. And we'll try to make a better life when we land across the sea. But send them back, the press cries out, back to where they came. We're far too low to feed and clothe, but not too low to blame. We are so low, but soon we know that the low folk will arise. The tyrants in their towers of gold shall hear the people's cries. No more shall they hold us in thrall, their lies we will not heed. But every heart shall hear the call, and the people will be free.
To protect his home and family from disaster, Steve used courage, wisdom, and his camera phone.
That should do it.
Way to go, Steve! By simply taking digital pictures of his family's important documents, Steve can always have them stored safely online, no matter when disaster strikes. Learn other simple ways to protect your home and family before a natural disaster at ready.gov. That's ready.gov. A message from FEMA and the Ad Council.
Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? which side are you on? Come all you good workers, good news to you I'll tell, of how that good old union has come in here to dwell. Oh, which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? My daddy was a miner, and I'm a miner's son, and I'll stick with the union till every battle's won. Oh, which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? They say in Harlan County there are no neutrals there. You'll either be a union man or a thug for J.H. Blair. Oh, which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Oh, workers, can you stand it? Oh, tell me how you can. Will you be a lousy scab, or will you be a man? Don't scab for the bosses, don't listen to their lies. Us poor folks haven't got a chance unless we organize. Oh, which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on?
For the union.
Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on?
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is Winborn, and they are going to be in Dublin, New Hampshire tonight at the Dublin School, and then from January 22nd to the 26th. They will be in New Orleans, Louisiana. The Folk Alliance International Official Showcase Artists. And I just want to say that this is really, I guess you could say, a second or a third generation of musicians growing up and nurtured by the fine performing talents of Noel Singwe Clear. And it was my great pleasure to manage to catch them in two places this past month. First of all, they performed at the Somerville Benefit for the Homeless at the Burren, and then on the 16th, they were up in Brattleboro, Vermont at the Lachis Theater with Noel Singwe Clear. And one of the big things that I like about these folks is for a long time, it seemed like if you were hearing English traditional singers, they were all sort of doing the Norfolk bleat, I think is the polite way of saying it. A gentleman since deceased, tremendously talented, but loved singing through his nose. And it's just great to hear people doing close harmony who don't do that. My first introduction was years and years ago. Yes, I'm dating myself. I actually was there at the Fox Hollow Folk Festival to hear John Roberts and Tony Berend when they were still graduate students at Cornell. And over the years, they have done wonderful things, and I'm hoping we can manage to fit in a bit of a complete unredacted concert recording that they made back at the Old Town School of Folk Music in Chicago on January 21st, 1978. But first, we're going to hear one more from Winborne. And, these are the people who did the song of the lower classes outside Trump Tower and then produced Song on the Times, a songbook, an album of social struggle. And this is their version of the Chartist anthem.
A hundred years, a thousand years, we're marching on the road. The going isn't easy yet, we've got a heavy load. We've got a heavy load. The way is blind with blood and sweat, and death sings in our ears. But time is marching on our side. We will defeat the years. We will defeat the years.
We men of bone of trunk and shank are only treasure death.
When
who carry at their breast heirs to the hungry earth, heirs to the hungry earth.
Of leather to take another turn and walk along the icy road he knows so well. The January man is here, starting each and every year. Along the road forever.
That was Steel Eye Span with a January Man from their latest, established in 1969. Before that, Winborn, as mentioned, gave us the song of the lower classes, Which Side Are You On?, and the Chartist Anthem from Song on the Times. And they are going to be at the Folk Alliance Showcase, which is in New Orleans this year, and they are the featured showcase artists. It runs from the 22nd to the 26th. Hopefully you've already got your tickets. New Orleans seems really nice right about now, when I'm sure the locks on my driver's side door have frozen up again. Well, our calendrical information is, as usual, brought to you by the Perpetual Almanac of Folklore by Charles Kightley. On January 17th is Twelfth Night Old Style. This was reckoned to be the proper time to wassail your apple trees. Old apple tree, we wassail thee in a hoping well will bear, for the Lord doth know where we may go till apples come another year, to blow well and to bear well, and let Mary let us be, let every one take off your hat and shout to the old apple tree, hats full, caps full, 3 bushel bags full, and a little heap under the stairs. This used to be a huge festival, and it still is observed by some orchards down Somerset and Devon way. And festive parties assembled to sing to the trees, drink their health, and pour buckets of hot cider over their roots. And cider-soaked toast was then left in the branches for the guardian birds. And finally, a great howl was raised while guns were fired into the air to frighten away the evil spirits. On January the 18th was Old 12th Day, and you know, this was before the calendar changed, and lambing is well underway in most lowland areas and continues now. January the 19th, days now growing noticeably longer. Unfortunately, as the days lengthen, so the cold strengthens. And yes, indeedy, we're certainly feeling that. What was it? Not even a week ago, it was like 74 degrees. Yes. Well, snow is coming, and it is now typical January in New England. January the 20th, the eve of St. Agnes's Day, a time for lovers' divinations. The historical St. Agnes was a 13-year-old Christian maiden who chose martyrdom rather than marriage to a pagan Roman officer. She is therefore the patroness of young girls and a bodily chastity, but is nevertheless popular with lovers. And here, this is the day when Martin Luther King is observed. There has already been a feast of Thanksgiving at Martin's Church here in Boston. And I would ask that people remember Ayanna Pressley and their thoughts and wishes for this. She has revealed the fact that she has lost all of her hair and due to stress over the impeachment process, and was wearing wigs when she announced that she will be running again as a representative for the 7th District here. Myself, being a cancer survivor, I do know what alopecia is like. It's a very common side effect of any chemotherapy drugs that you get. And most people, their hair growth does recover in time, though I understand that there is a significant proportion of people, somewhere in the neighborhood of 7 to 10%, who actually never do recover their hair. So, on to January 21st, which is St. Agnes's Day, and also when the sun enters the house of Aquarius. For characteristics of the Aquarians, you would do worse than to consult the Calendar of Shepherds, published in 1604. January to the 22nd was St. Vincent's Day. Observe the weather and the legs, which are said to be ruled by Aquarius. Remember on St. Vincent's Day, if that the sun his beams display, for 'tis a token bright and clear of prosperous weather all the year. So you not only want to observe the weather, but what about the legs? Well, the shepherd's prognostication of 1729, obviously someone felt that the Calendar of Shepherds needed some updating. The legs slender signify one to be dull of capacity, yet this faileth often in learned students. The calves very big, bearing out, to be sluggish and rude-mannered. The calves meanly big-formed, to be witty and honest condition. The legs big-sinewed and brawn, to be strong. Small-sinewed, to be libidinous. Big and ill-fashioned, to be unshamefaced. The parts about the ankles over-fleshy, to be foolish. On January the 23rd, this was reckoned a good time to start planting quickset hedges. The white thorn was esteemed to be the best for hedges. January the 24th, keep good watchdogs about you these dark nights. And if you can't afford a dog, there's always geese. They make a very reliable watchdog. And what was that about burns and suppers? We started off way back on Celtic Dusk with Westland Winds. January the 25th is Burns Night. On this day in 1759, Robert Burns was born, and Scots everywhere celebrate their national poet's birthday with Burns suppers, whose centerpiece is the famous haggis. Fair fa, your honest sonsy face, great chieftain o' the puddin' race, aboot them all ye take your place, pon stripe or therm. Weel are ye worthy o' grace as lang's my earm. That's just part of Burns's address to a haggis. Some of us who were not raised in the Scottish tradition deem haggis a dish to be eaten in extremely small portions with large amounts of single malt. Oh, this is also the feast of the conversion of Saint Paul. And if the day of Saint Paul prove clear, then shall be tide a happy year. If it chance to snow or rain, then shall be dear all kinds of grain. But if high winds shall be aloft, wars shall vex this realm full oft. And if thick mists make dark the sky, both beasts and fowls this year shall die. And that's your weather prognostication for January the 25th. Yes, you will notice a definite interest in what the weather for the year will bring. Here in the States, we tend to consult the Farmer's Almanac. January the 26th, shun winter melancholy at this dark season. January the 27th, do not sleep over long. January the 29th, be careful when you cut your fingernails. And we'll move to January 31st, when I'll be back on the air. And you are advised to protect your lambs against cold and predators, and cook wildfowl. Tusser's 500 Points of Good Husbandry of 1573 notes, young broom or good pasture thy ewes do require, warm barn and in safety their lambs do desire. Luck often well to them for foxes and dogs, for pits and for brambles, for vermin and hogs. Because, yes, if you don't protect young lambs, they are very likely to be eaten by all manner of things. Well, as I mentioned, we seem to have a CD problem, and we've managed to get through it. But I would like to play some of John and Tony's Old Town School of Folk Music, a concert for you.
Well, I'm Tony Barron. This is John Roberts, the good-looking one there with the beard. And we'll try and sing some songs with some choruses. And please sing. This is Chicago, after all, the home of folk music in America, center of everything. Best city in America. I like it. It's a good one. All right. This is This is a song incorporating one of those old-fashioned words that has now taken on a new meaning, but this is the old-fashioned word, but you can believe what you like. It's called Garner's Gay.
Come all you Garner's Gay that are just now in your prime. I wish I was in that bonny girl's arms where I've been many a time. Where I've been a many a time. Where I've been a many a time. I wish I was in that bonny girl's arms where I've been a many a time. Green willows, they will twist. Green willows, they will twine. I wish I was in that bonny girl's arms where I've been many a time. Where I've been a many a time. Where I've been a many a time. I wish I was in that bonny girl's arms where I've been a many a time. Well, it's very nice drinking ale, but it's much better drinking wine. And it's far better sleeping in that bonny girl's arms where I've been many a time. Where I've been a many a time. Where I've been a many a time. It's far better sleeping in that bonny girl's arms where I've been a many a time. Once I had time enough to flourish night and day, until that girl, that bonny, bonny girl, come and stole all me time away. Come and stole all me time away. Come and stole all me time away. Until that girl, that bonny, bonny girl, come and stole all me time away. And now my whole time is gone, and I cannot plant any new. For the very same place where the old time grew, it's all over running, running rue. It's all over running, running rue. It's all over running, running rue. For the very same place where the old time grew, it's all over running, running rue. Oh, the rue, that's a running, running rue. That's not the flower for me. I will pluck up all that running, running rue and plant down the sturdy oak tree. And plant down the sturdy oak tree. And plant down the sturdy oak tree. I will pluck up all that running, running rue and plant down the sturdy oak tree. Stand you fast, stand you fast, sturdy oak. Stand you fast, don't ever die. I'll prove as true to me own true love as the stars prove true to the sky. As the stars prove true to the sky. As the stars prove true to the sky. I'll prove as true to me own true love as the stars prove true to the sky.
Thank you.
This is sort of another version of that same story, this one. And people pay attention and listen to me song. I'll tell you all a story and it won't detain you long. I came home from sea the other night, and a lassie I chanced to meet. She invited me to dance with her down on Peter Street. Well, this lassie was persuasive and so nice to old Jack Tar. So I agreed to go with her, and so we hired a car.
And the neighbours, they all stopped and stared. And I heard one of them say, "Be Jesus, he'll need that jaunting car before he gets away." Well, now when we got inside the house, oh, then the whiskey was brought in. And when every man had had his fill of the dance, it did begin. And me love and I, we danced a reel to a good old-fashioned tune. And I did a couple of double shuffles all around the room. Well, when the dancing, it was over, boys, then for bed we did prepare. And when I awoke next morning, the truth I will declare, me gold pocket watch and £50 and me lady friend had fled and left me there, Jack, all alone, stark naked on the bed. Well, I looked all around the room, but nothing could I see but a lady's shift and apron, just not big enough for me. I tore me hair and I cursed the drink. Oh, Lord, what will I do? The Lord forgive me, Wigan Town, will I ever again see you? Well, when the daylight was departing and night was drawing near, I put on the shift and apron and I walked down to the pier. And as I crept on board the ship, I heard one sailor say, "Be Jesus, old Jack has got the ducks before he got away." Oh, is that the new spring fashion, Jack, that you have brought from shore? Where is the shop you bought it, boy? And have they any more? The last time that I spoke to you, you said you were homeward bound. Christ, you might have got a better suit than that for £50. Well, I might have got a better suit if I had had a chance. But I met this pretty fair maid who invited me to dance. And I danced me own destruction with that lassie that was so neat. So no more will I go dancing, boys, down on Peter Street.
So, this is live at the Old Town School of Folk Music in Chicago, recorded on January 21st in 1978, and we heard Garner's Agay and Peter Street. And we're going to hear a story. Yes, a long story about a certain vulpine creature. And at that point, I expect that Mr. Buchert will be coming in for another fantastic sound collage.
Up in the dales of North Yorkshire, as I heard it once upon a time, there was a village kind of set way off any of the main roads, and a stranger came into this village one time. A big, tall man with black, curly hair and a big, beautiful, long, black mustache and kind of dark-skinned said his name was Mr. Fox. And he was kind of a good-looking fella, you know, and he was apparently unattached because within a very short space of time, he had started going around visiting the various young, unattached females in the town, courting, as they did in the old days. You know, you'd go along at tea time and there'd always be a parent there or an elder brother or something like that, you know, chaperoning, and you'd talk about all kinds of things, you know, except what you really wanted to talk about, and that was called courting in those days. And you could do it to a number of different women, of course, and the women stayed home and the men all went around visiting around. So Mr. Fox was having a high old time going around visiting all of the young women. And one in particular, who we're concerned with in this story, was name of Mary, was getting very attached to Mr. Fox. He would always come visiting Mary on a Tuesday afternoon about 4 o'clock, you know, tea time, and she'd always have some crumpets made up and new cakes and have tea. And one of her brothers would be there because both of her parents were dead. And she had four brothers, all big hulking lads, so she wasn't afraid, you know. And besides, she got to like Mr. Fox in a hurry. He was a lot more interesting than most of the ploughboys who came to court, you know. He had obviously travelled to all kinds of foreign lands, and he knew tales of other places, and he could tell her of cities and countries that she, you know, not only never been to, but couldn't hope to go to, and she really looked forward to Mr. Fox coming around. And after about 3 months of this, she couldn't hold her curiosity in anymore and said, "You know, Mr. Fox, you come and visited me all these times, and, you know, I don't really know where you live. In fact, nobody in town that I know of knows where you live." And he said, "Well, it's no big secret, Mary. I have this very big house in the woods, deep in the woods, south of the town." And she said, "Oh, well, it's not surprising nobody had seen your house, because people from this town don't go in those woods, you know. People think they're haunted, or the spirits, and they're bad luck to go in those woods." And he said, "Oh," he said, "it's perfectly safe in those woods. I live in there, go backwards and forwards there every day." He said, "Why don't you come out and visit me sometime and have tea? You've given me all this hospitality here." And she said, "Well, Mr. Fox, you know, I'd like to do that, but, you know," they didn't really get around to fixing a time for it. It was sort of, you know, difficult to go visiting in those days, so it sort of passed by. Well, a few more weeks went by, and it was a Sunday afternoon in late spring, and sunny day, and Mary decided she had some free time. She'd go out picking wildflowers. And she wandered out and saw a patch of bluebells and wandered over to them and picked a few and kind of got to daydreaming. That was more important than picking flowers anyway. She had some spare time to herself, and she saw another patch of flowers and wandered over to them, and then she wandered a bit further to another one, and she wandered, and before she knew what was happening, without looking up, she was kind of in the woods, and she kept following bits of fern and fungus and wildflowers, and before very long, she was deep in the woods, and she sort of looked up. You know, something made her look up, and she realized where she was, and she wasn't really scared. She knew she was in the woods, but it was middle of the afternoon, and she thought, "Well, it's time I was getting home," and she could sort of see where the sun was through the trees, and she thought, "Well, all I've got to do is walk north, and I'll get home eventually." But she stood up just to see if there was a path, perchance, and she noticed just a little way off what looked like a clearing, and she thought, "Well, if I get over to the clearing, there might be a path leading north out of it, and that will clearly be the easiest way to go." So she wandered over to the clearing there, and when she got there, found it was just an enormous meadow, and down the other end of the meadow was this great vast house with the obvious Tudor design, you know, the big beams in the walls, and just a vast house, and she knew that it had to be Mr. Fox's house. And she thought, "Well, it's 4 o'clock, it's about tea time, you know, he did say I could come visit. Maybe I'll go and have a cup of tea and maybe ask him the best way home." So she wandered down and walked up the great big stone steps and a great big oak door there. She was really impressed. It's bigger house than any of them in the village. And she knocked on the big iron knocker there, and there was a hollow sound inside, and nobody came to the door, and she was sort of disappointed. But she really wanted to take a look in the house since she was here. She was curious, and so she didn't like to go in the door straight away to see if there was anybody home, really. So she walked down the steps and found a window she could peek into, and that just encouraged her more because she was really curious. It just looked like a really neat old house. So she came back up to the steps, and as she's walking up the steps, something caught her eye, and up on the lintel above the door were carved some words, and the words said, "Be bold, be bold." Well, she thought that was a funny sort of welcome sign, you know, so she took it, you know, as a sign to go in, and so she turned the door handle and pushed open the big oak door, and inside was this great big hallway, wood-lined, beautiful dark wood, and she looked in a few of the rooms off the hallway, and they weren't too interesting. It was a study and a sitting room and a library and things like that, and what really caught her attention was this beautiful big wide staircase going up to a gallery. And you know how it is in old houses, if you go to England, or sometimes they find them in this country, they have these big wide staircases with a little carpet in the middle. And you have to walk up it, you know, pretending, men, that you've got a sword dangling off your hip or something, and the ladies with great big crinolines, you know, and you feel what it's like walking up these things. Well, she just started walking up this staircase, you know, feeling very grand, got up onto this beautiful gallery with windows looking out onto the clearing. And she was going to turn round, but she saw a door down the end of the gallery and thought there were some more words over it. So she walked down to the door, and up above this door, the words said, "Be bold, but not too bold." She reached down for the handle and turned it and pushed open the door and looked in. It was just a bedroom. It was obviously Mr. Fox's bedroom, and very nice one it was too, with a big four-poster bed and a canopy, you know, and keep out the mosquitoes. And what really attracted her attention was over the other side of the room was yet another door with some more words over the top. So she walked across the other side of the room, and over the door this time the words said, be bold, but not too bold, lest that your heart's blood should run cold. And she reached down for the handle and turned it and pushed it open, and it was dark inside. She thought it was a cupboard at first, but she went in, and as her eyes grew accustomed to the dark, she saw there were three what looked like bathtubs in there. And she walked over to the first, and it seemed to be full of a dark liquid, and she put her finger into it and tasted it, and it was blood. And she went over to the next one, and it was full of bones, and they felt as if they were human bones. And she went over to the next one, it was full of long female hair and skin. And by this time she was pretty terrified, you know, and ran out of this room and closed the door and made sure she'd left everything in order in the bedroom, and ran out of the second door and closed it, and she was just hurrying down the gallery, and she stopped dead because she suddenly heard screaming coming from outside, and she looked out through the windows to the clearing, and there came Mr. Fox striding out of the clearing straight towards the house, dragging a young woman by the hair. He just had hold of the hair, you know, and he was dragging her along the ground, striding along, and she was screaming and yelling, and he didn't take any notice. And Mary thought, my God, where am I going to hide? And just in time, she ran down the stairs and turned the corner under the big staircase there, just as Mr. Fox threw open the door with a slam and marched straight across the hallway and towards the staircase, you know. And as he's striding up the staircase, the young woman that he's dragging reaches out and grabs hold of the banister. Mr. Fox, without breaking a stride, whips out a sword and hacks off her hand at the wrist, and he just keeps going straight up, down the gallery, in through the second door, and closes it, and there was silence. Well, the hand fell into the lap of Mary, who was kind of pressed hiding against the staircase there, and she picked it up and ran out of the front door and ran north just as fast as ever she could, you know, and she didn't stop running until she got home. Well, that was on Sunday afternoon, and on Tuesday at 4 o'clock, sure enough, Mr. Fox came visiting as usual, and he sat down, and conversation was kind of slow for a while, and Mr. Fox noticed this, you know, and he said, Mary, you look sort of pale. Are you not well? Have you not been sleeping well? And she said, well, Mr. Fox, I've had this terrible dream the last three nights, and it's just disturbing me. And he said, well, I've traveled in many lands, Mary, and heard many dreams. Perhaps you could tell it to me and I could read it for you. And she said, well, I don't really like to, Mr. Fox. And he said, no, do. I'd like to hear the dream. So she said, well, I dreamed I was picking flowers in the woods south of the town. I dreamed I came to a big clearing. And I dreamed that one end of the clearing was this big house, and I dreamed I went up to this house, and over the front door were some words that said, be bold." And she said, I walked in through this door and up a staircase to a second door, and the words over this door said, be bold, but not too bold. And Mr. Fox said, but it was not so, and it is not so. And she said, well, Mr. Fox, then I dreamed I went in through this second door and to a third door where the words said, be bold, but not too bold, lest that your heart's blood should run cold. And she said, inside this door, I found three bathtubs, one filled with blood, one filled with bones, and one filled with human hair. And Mr. Fox said, but was not so and is not so. And she said, well, then I came out of this third door, Mr. Fox. And then she said, I dreamed I saw you striding out of a clearing, dragging a young woman behind. And I dreamed that you came in through the front door and you marched straight towards the big staircase, dragging the young woman up, just striding up. And halfway up, she grabbed out and held onto the banister there. And without breaking a stride, you pulled out a sword and hacked off her hand at the wrist and kept marching. And by this time, Mr. Fox was on his feet and he yelled, but it was not so and is not so. And God forbid it should be so. And Mary stood up and pulled out the hand and threw it on his plate and said, but Mr. Fox, it was so, and it is so, and here's the very hand to show. And her four brothers took him outside and cut him to bits.
It only takes a minute to find out if you may have prediabetes, and you can do it at doihaveprediabetes.org. But you're probably not going to. Nope. I'm sure you've got a perfectly good excuse. Kids, work. I get it. You're busy. So what better time than now? Let's begin. Raise one finger if you're a man, Ladies, none yet. Oh, count in your head if you're driving. Now, three more fingers for everyone over 60, two over 50, one over 40, one more if you're not physically active, another finger if anyone in your family has type 2 diabetes, another if you've got high blood pressure. If you're overweight, raise another finger, two if you're very overweight, and three if you're really